Today on Vox Talks Economics, women's voices are even more absent from economic debate than we thought. Welcome to Vox Talks Economics from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. My name is Tim Phillips. Every week we bring you the best new research in economics, so remember to subscribe and follow us on Instagram as well. We know women are underrepresented in academic and professional economics, but if male economists are more comfortable expressing a strong opinion than their female colleagues, does this then increase the perceived imbalance? Sarah Smith of the University of Bristol and CEPR is one of the authors of new research into the difference between the male and female voice in economics, and she joins me now. Sarah, welcome back to Vox Talks Economics.
Hi, Tim. Thanks very much for inviting me.
I guess this sort of difference would normally be impossible to quantify, but you have found a way to measure this effect using data from the Economist Expert Panel. What is this EEP? Who's on it?
So it was started by the University of Chicago Institute for Global Markets back in 2011, and they decided to ask questions to around 50 of the US leading academic economists. So these are people who are at the top institutions and economics departments in the US. And they ask them a question or two every fortnight, and it's pretty much on topical issues of the day. So this week's questions are about energy sanctions and about inequality and about Ukrainian crisis. And you know, they're really trying to gauge the opinions of leading experts on these issues. And so they started with these US economists in 2011 and then added European economists in 2016. So there are about 100 economists in total. And because they're asked questions every 2 weeks, you've got thousands of economic opinions by our leading academics. And you can analyze this data to see whether there are substantive differences in opinions between different groups and whether there are differences in the way those opinions are expressed. And it was the second aspect of that, you know, the way opinions are expressed, that we decided to focus on in looking at gender.
How many female panelists are there on the EEP? Do they have a similar background, similar experience to their male counterparts?
As you mentioned in your introduction, women economists are underrepresented. So, you know, at the level that, you know, these panel members are typically at, so, you know, professors, we find around 13% in the US and around 15% in the UK and a similar proportion in the rest of Europe. If anything, women are slightly overrepresented in the IGM panel. There is around 20% of the panel members are women. Mm-hmm. So we're talking around 21 people. The panels are diverse in terms of geography. So the European panel is drawn from over Europe. The US panel is drawn pretty broadly. And they're seen as being reasonably diverse in terms of their ideology. But focusing on the very top academics means that they do tend to come from a fairly concentrated number of institutions. And they've also typically got their PhDs from a fairly concentrated set of institutions. But in terms of whether the men and women are the same, they're pretty balanced across those institutions and in terms of where they got their PhDs. So to the extent that we can measure their characteristics, the men and women are pretty similar. The women are a little bit younger on average.
You tested their responses for what you've called volubility, certainty, and confidence. What's the difference between these three dimensions? How do you distinguish them in the data that you have?
Yeah, so the dimensions we looked at were motivated a lot by what other people have done in economics and psychology. So in both economics and psychology, there's a literature on men and women's willingness to give opinions and on how much they express themselves in public debate. So, for example, male and female politicians is one study that's out there. So that's what we mean by volubility. I guess it's how vocal, how willing to express opinions are these women economists. Certainty is how certain are they in giving an opinion, and is driven very much by the nature of the question. So panel members are shown a statement and they're asked whether they strongly agree, they're uncertain, they disagree or strongly disagree with that statement. So that gives us definitions of am I uncertain or do I strongly agree or disagree? And then confidence, the panel members are also asked to say how confident they are in their opinion. So there is quite a degree of correlation between their certainty and their confidence. So if people strongly agree or disagree, then they're typically more confident in their opinion than not. But people can be very confidently uncertain. So Caroline Hoxby's kind of does quite a lot of I'm uncertain with confidence of 10. So we do have these three different dimensions. In terms of volubility, we're looking at whether the expert gives an opinion. So do they respond at all when they're asked the question? And you might be a bit worried that maybe that reflects their availability.
Yes.
Maybe that kind of differs. But actually, if you look at whether the expert gives an opinion at all, that's also correlated with other things that make sense. So whether the question is in their area of expertise, for example. We think that giving an opinion in and of itself is interesting because it seems to be influenced by things that matter. And also, it does really tie in to the measures that have been used outside economics in terms of women's willingness to give an opinion. And thinking about who these panel members are, they've all signed up to be on a panel to give their opinion. So in a sense, they are choosing whether or not to respond to one question or not. And that is varying from question to question. It's just as we find there are systematic differences between men and women. So we think that these three dimensions are independently interesting. So volubility is referring to the presence of women's voices. So do they give an opinion? And also, do they additionally leave comments? So the panel allows the experts to write a written comment. And so that also captures how much women are engaging in the discussion. So I think volubility is really important for thinking about how much women's voice is featuring in these set of opinions. Certainty, you could think of that as either precision about beliefs or self-confidence in expressing an opinion. And then confidence also, I think, is about how precise am I in the nature of the opinion that I'm giving. And interestingly, we find gender differences in all of these dimensions. So women are less likely than men to respond. They are less likely than men to write down a comment. They are more likely than men to be uncertain. I mean, uncertainty is an interesting thing in economics. Often the answers of, well, it depends on one thing than another. There is genuine reasons why you might be uncertain about something. And some of the questions are asking about value judgment. You're asked to weigh off efficiency with equities. You might be uncertain about how society might weigh these two things. So lots of good reasons why people might be uncertain. And it's not that they don't know. So women are more likely to be uncertain, and they're also systematically less confident in their opinions. We also find that when they strongly agree and disagree, they also do that less confidently. So this very much ties into existing literature. So it's sort of exactly what previous studies have found. Why is this interesting? The one very striking thing that comes out of this study, we are focusing on women who are in the same institutions, who've been trained at the same PhD institutions. They're incredibly successful in a male-dominated field. You wouldn't imagine that these are women who kind of, you know, lack confidence or lacked opinions. It's just, you know, we find this difference. And also, they've chosen to be on this panel to express opinions. But yet, you know, you find this difference between men and women. So I think it's the differences among this narrow and heavily selected group that's really quite striking.
Yes, and given these systematic differences, we look at perhaps some explanations for them. As you say, previous research and also I think all of our experience shows that men are more comfortable giving opinions on things that they don't know very much about. Now, given that everyone has a specialism in economics and some of these questions are quite precise, is this a factor in it that men are more happy to give some confident explanation that's outside their area of expertise?
That was one thing that we explored. So I learned a new expression while doing this research, which is male answer syndrome. So that's basically men being happy to give an answer on things they know nothing about. Mm-hmm. To explore that, we basically categorized all the questions into different fields and categorized kind of like the experts into kind of like, so what fields they reported they belong to in either the CPR, which program belongs to the CPR, or which program they belong to the NBR. So we had a measure of their areas of expertise. We classified all the questions, and then we could see whether the questions were in field. So there's a general tendency that if your question is in field, you're less likely to give an opinion, you're more uncertain, you're less confident. But the gender difference persists both within your field and outside your field. So it's not just male answer syndrome. Men are more confident or certain in answering questions they know less about. It's a difference which is there even when people are being asked about questions within their area of expertise. And I think that's important because that might translate into policymaking. These are opinions. They're not directly influencing policy, but these are the sorts of questions that women and men are going to be asked when it comes to policy. policymaking. They're going to be within expertise. So if it was just outside expertise, it would be less relevant to what does this mean for real world policymaking. But that was quite striking that it was both within expertise and also outside expertise.
As you say, this is an opinion survey. They're not making policy here. At one level, it's an entertainment. It's a bit of fun. Do you think that maybe the male economists are more comfortable with that and play with it a little bit more by expressing stronger opinions?
That's an interesting idea. I hadn't really thought about that. And I don't know whether it's just a bit of fun. Mm. And the male economists are more likely to comment. They're taking it seriously because they're commenting. All of the questions and all of the responses are public information. And some of these experts end up going on to work in the IMF or the World Bank. The opinions they've given are on public record, and they might come back to, you know, bite them in the backside if they say something that's sort of completely out there. Because I think it has been the case when people have gone for jobs, people have looked at this as a record of their public opinions on things. These opinions do get reported on in the media. It's not just for fun. I think it does have some kind of, even as a sort of opinion survey, it has some real world implications or some real world effects.
Now, we might instinctively discount a very strong opinion from someone who we often hear strong opinions from. And so if more men are giving strong opinions, then we might take less notice of them. So your research is about the opinions that are given out. Can you say anything about what people are hearing from that?
Yeah, so I think this is a really good point, because if confident men were not listened to and unconfident women were listened to, though the gender differences wouldn't matter. So we were trying to think of ways to test this. And the insight we give in the paper is by looking at how many Twitter followers these expert academics have. And if it correlates with the measures of confidence and certainty and strong opinions that we generate from the panel data. Mm-hmm. And quite surprisingly, what we find is that the men who tend to express strong opinions and are more confident tend to have more Twitter followers. Twitter isn't a complete measure of influence, but what this suggests is that confident men who are certain, are listened to, or they have more followers, they're followed more, you know, they're speaking to bigger audiences than men who are less confident. So that tells us that confident opinions, strong opinions, work for men in terms of generating more interest or giving them people to talk to. What was interesting actually is that for women, you don't find that same positive relationship. I mean, we're not talking about a lot of women, but whereas the relationship between confidence and followings is positive for men, it's basically flat for women. There's a big literature as to what drives these gender differences, which are way, way outside the scope of this paper, is it nature or nurture? But, you know, in a number of other studies, they comment on women being more reluctant to express themselves strongly because of fear of backlash, or not having the same payoff for expressing confident opinions or strong opinions. The patterns that we found in with the Twitter data are consistent with that.
Now, you have found the systematic gender difference on the EEB. Is there any way that you would organise the EEB differently to close this gap?
When EEP report the opinions, they report them in their raw state, and they also weight by confidence. I mean, that seems to be upweighting the opinions of men if there's this gender difference. So I think weighting by confidence is not doing that would help to kind of amplify the voices of women more. I don't know how much weight they give to strongly agree versus agree, but if that's driven partly by gender difference, that seems to be a less meaningful distinction than perhaps just agree, uncertain, disagree. So possibly one change in the reporting of the results that they could do, which I think would slightly take out some of the effect of this gender differences.
Do you think that this insight has an external validity for the profession in general? Could we be also thinking about how we manage seminars and meetings and conferences better so that those more cautious voices are heard?
I mean, I think one of the things that, having done the analysis and reflected on it, that I thought was an important takeaway is to reinforce the importance of ensuring diverse voices are heard, not just focusing on representation in numbers. So, you know, in economics, I think we're conscious of the underrepresentation of women and the need to try and bring more women in and to ensure women progress. But the issue about voice is also important. It's sort of suggesting that we know that what matters is not just diversity and representation, but diversity in views and ensuring all those views are heard. And so we need to focus on that aspect as well as just the numerical representation. I think that means thinking very carefully about how conversations occur within departments, about how meetings are organized, and about seminars. There's been a lot of rich data collected on practices in seminars and interventions from men and women in audiences and some gender differences there. I think all of this together is suggesting that this is an additional dimension to promoting diversity. You know, it's not just about the numbers, it's also thinking a lot about how we behave in order to create an inclusive environment. You know, a lot of this is very well known in the EDI literature more generally. It's just a real reminder that this matters and that this is going to impact on the profession. Another thing that seemed to me to be relevant for thinking about economics is the fact that it's a male-dominated profession and the fact that male voices are different to women means that our discipline has been shaped by the preponderance of male voices. So economists are seen as being very confident. This isn't necessarily completely good or bad, it's a bit of both. You know, economists have been very successful in public policy making, I think, because they've expressed views confidently. But it's come to define economics. So encouraging more women would probably change a little bit the nature of economic voice, and we may build in a bit more uncertainty into economic opinions. And again, politicians love certainty, but we're giving confident opinions that when there is a lot of underlying uncertainty, that isn't necessarily helpful in the long run. You know, I think what these findings do is both reflect on how we need to behave within the discipline and also make us think about how the nature of the discipline has been shaped by the gender imbalance within it.
We'll definitely be following any of the progress on any of these dimensions. But Sarah, thank you very much for talking about it today. Always fascinating talking to you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
The paper is called Male and Female Voices in Economics, and the authors are Hans Sivertsen and Sarah Smith. It is discussion paper 17166 at CEPR. This has been a Vox Talk from the Centre for Economic Policy Research. Well, like Sarah and Hans, we want to make economics more diverse and inclusive. So if you're a regular listener, let us know if we're doing a good enough job. When you become a regular listener, by subscribing, you'll find more than 200 episodes. So whatever type of economics you like, there is a Vox Talk waiting for you.